Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Fridays from the State House call for March 3rd, 2023. I want to start by thanking our sponsors, Cornerstone Government Affairs, the contract lobbying team that we use at the Capitol, along with our own internal team, which is led by Maria Bentrout. So I will turn it over to Maria to run over or run through some of the bills that have been percolating, I suppose, through our funnel week that happened this week. So Maria, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So so as Brandon mentioned, this week was our first legislative funnel week. And what that means is that it starts on Monday and it ends today. So March 3rd is the date that House policy bills must move through a full House committee to remain viable. That's the same with Senate policy bills. If the bills don't make it, they're considered dead for the remainder of the year. And we have been extremely busy at the Capitol. I'm not going to lie. It's been an incredibly wild week. We've been advocating certainly for our own legislative priorities, but also watching for bills that might be harmful to our provider members. So and really this week was full of a lot of surprises at the end here of the first funnel, and a lot of defense that we were playing this week. So typically what happens during funnel week, again, to be expected, we had a couple of things pop up at the last minute. Sometimes lawmakers will hold on to bills, or committees will hold on to bills until the last second if they feel that it might be a controversial bill. And they don't want to allow opponents to have a certain amount of time to provide feedback, et cetera. And again, we weren't surprised by a few things. We were surprised by a few others. So one of the things that has been on our radar for many years, and I'm sure most of you know this in the nursing facility community, is what we call granny cams. So referred to in legislation as authorized electronic monitoring. So this is something, again, that we anticipated. I'm happy to say we really took a lot of time between last session and this session and these quote unquote off season to really prepare for this type of a situation where, you know, legislators, based on constituent pressure, were attempting to put cameras in not only just in commons areas, et cetera, which I know some of you have already, but directly in residents' rooms. So this is something that we have opposed for many, many years. Again, we anticipated this being a threat. I'm really proud of our members and our team at IHCA for sitting down and finding a workable piece of draft legislation that you know, were we put in a position where we had to do some sort of camera language. We found a workable piece of legislation that we could provide. We were in fact put in that position earlier in the session. We were asked if we had anything. And again, we spent a great deal of time. We put together a work group to come up with some language that we could live with if we absolutely had to. With that said, we were, again, as I said, in that position. We did provide some language that we felt was airtight. We had several attorneys look at it. We had a national expert come in and take a look at the legislation too, an attorney, and get it to a point where we could live with it. So with that in mind, we did give that legislation to some members of the Health and Human Services Committee, the chair. And we did, in conversations and negotiations, come to an agreement that they would not move the legislation. And I'm happy to say that yesterday we were able to kill that legislation when it comes to a committee or an individual bill. So that is good news. That is on the House side of things. The bill never had legs in the Senate. We talked to them very early on and were able to get them to a point where they agreed that camera legislation was not something that they would make an issue this year. So we were confident that we would be able to kill the bill in the Senate, but we didn't even want it to get a subcommittee in the House, and we were successful in preventing that from happening. So that is a big win. We do know that we need to keep an eye on this. The Appropriations and Standings Bill are the last bills to come out during any legislative session. And occasionally, lawmakers will try to squeeze something into that bill. So again, we're confident that that won't happen this year based on our conversations with the relevant and prominent legislators. But again, always something to keep an eye out for. So that is good news for us. One thing that we were not anticipating is a nursing facility visitation bill that just popped up kind of out of nowhere and surprised us a bit. So we had to do a lot of sort of immediate reaction and defense on that. What we were able to determine, it's a bill for an act relating to visitation policies in both hospitals and nursing facilities. And the first thing that our team does when something like this comes out is say, well, wait a minute, what is the impetus behind this bill? Where did this come from? And so immediately I was able to have some conversations with the legislators that were sponsoring this bill and ask them, you know, what is the genesis of this? And they said it was a specific and individual situation at a hospital that occurred where an individual was sick and they tested him for COVID. He tested positive and the family was not allowed to see this gentleman while he was in the hospital and near end of life care. So we see this sometimes, you know, gut reactions to specific constituent situations. But, you know, we don't believe that policy should be or that law should be, I guess, created based on individual scenarios or one-off constituent situations. So and we are aware that this happens occasionally, but it is not a huge problem across the board for nursing homes. So my question was, why were we drug into this bill if it was a hospital scenario? And essentially they said, well, we wanted to cover, you know, all healthcare facilities. So what we did is I had conversations with the subcommittee chair on both sides, the House and the Senate, and said, you know, this bill is not necessary. We don't have issues with this. When we do, they're one-offs, they're rare. We handle it on a case-by-case basis. And ultimately, we were able to get to a point where I think we've convinced them in both chambers not to run the bill on the House floor. And if they do, then the only thing that we would recommend would be an amendment that would really just codify, put into law what already exists in regulations. So essentially, nothing would change for our members if this bill were to pass. Everything would go exactly as is. It's a redundant bill. But again, if the point of the lawmakers is to send a message, then we said, okay, then it has to be amended in this way where nothing changes for us in nursing facilities. So, we'll keep you posted on that. My gut tells me this bill won't move. I was flat out asked by, the sponsor of the bill yesterday, is this bill necessary? And I said, no. So, we'll keep you posted on that, but it's certainly something, like I said, that surprised us, that we will definitely be keeping an eye on. Another bill I wanted to mention is related to Medicaid reimbursement to individuals who meet nursing home level of care and are required to register as sex offenders. Again, this is moving in both chambers. I think is a live round, and I think that it'll go to the floor for debate. And I do think that it will pass. Again, more to come. I could be surprised. Things change so quickly at the Capitol. That I'm often surprised. So, but I do feel good about this bill, which would be really helpful for serving this special population. So we'll certainly keep you posted on that. I anticipate that'll be on the debate floor in the next week or so. Another issue I want to bring up, I'm going to kind of pitch this one to Brandon, but I did want to mention that I know that it seems that we are very heavy on the nursing facility side of things. They're pretty visible at the Capitol and quite a target, which is why we have a lot of defense on them and just kind of a lot of action in general. Every single day that we're down there, I am also actively looking through the bill book and having conversations with legislators and others in the lobby about HCBS services, our home health providers, our assisted living providers. So I don't want you to think that we are not paying attention, because we are as closely paying attention to that set of providers, to you all, as we are the nursing facilities. It just seems nursing facilities have a target on them for the past couple of years here at the Capitol. So I feel good about a lot of the progress that we're making when it comes to HCBS, you know, again, home health and AL. But again, I just don't want you to feel like we weren't paying attention. We are. But, you know, quite frankly, a lot of the things that we're wanting to achieve when it comes to HCBS we're able to do either directly through the departments or other means. So anyway, we are keeping an eye out. We'll certainly keep you posted. There are a couple of bills that may impact HCBS providers that we're aware of and that we're keeping an eye on. One popped up yesterday, in particular related to background checks for providers, home health and ALE providers, and we're keeping an eye on that one. I'm in conversations with the sponsor of that bill, Representative Jones from the Spencer area, and I don't think that has any movement, certainly none in the Senate. So we will keep you posted, as I said. So I'll stop rambling. I'm going to mention one more bill, and I'll have Brandon explain the specifics of it. But this bill is moving quickly. I do think that it will pass. It's related to the Medicaid program and third-party recovery and taxation of the MCO premiums. So I'm going to let Brandon explain in smart guy number terms what exactly that means for you all.
Thanks, Maria. So it's basically the main thrust of this bill. I think that's probably the most important to you all is the premium tax. And so there is a premium tax on many of the insurance companies in the state already. What had been lacking was a premium tax on our Medicaid managed care organizations. And so this bill basically creates a 2.5% premium tax on the Medicaid managed care organization, with the funds from that tax being returned to the medical assistance program or the Medicaid program, which is under the purview of the Department of Health and Human Services. And so basically it's just returning those tax premiums or those tax dollars to the medical assistance program for the department to use as they see fit, is kind of how the wording in the bill is right now. What we don't know yet is where the department will use those funds. And so I think, you know, any injection of additional funding into the pot gives us another target to aim at in the future. And so while we may not be successful in modifying the bill to carve in providers or carve in our HCBS or our nursing facility providers or home health in this iteration, it does give us a place to point to for future funding if it does end up passing. So we're looking at this and seeing it move and glad that there's going to be a potential another opportunity to generate some rate increases. So yep. That's what I had, Maria.
Okay. Great. So again, I think the final thing that I'll end on is that, you know, we are continuing to advocate for appropriations for all three of our sectors. And again, those conversations are ongoing. We are in constant contact with leadership in the House and the Senate regarding the needs financially of our sectors. So I just want to assure you that those are ongoing. They'll continue until the end of the session, until the appropriations, you know, the committee starts to meet and really hash out those numbers. But again, we'll keep you posted on any progress there. But you can, you know, have that expectation that it'll be, you know, probably mid-April, early to mid-April before we really have any solid information on that. But we are pushing in your favor. So, but yeah, I think with that, Brandon, I'll punt it over to you to talk about QAF and anything else you have.
All right. Thanks, Maria. And I know we've talked about this multiple times. I think we talked about this last week in some detail with estimates. The department then, so quality assurance assessment fee, the department then had their meeting on Tuesday, followed by our call, our SNF all member call, which is provided additional detail and context. And so I won't go into as much detail on this call. But just wanted to mention that the program has begun moving. The department has laid out what the new model will look like. And so I will give some of those figures here. Previously, providers were paying a tax of either $12.75 or $2.45 if you were in a waiver class. And so that $12.75 category is moving to $33.90. And those in a waiver class is moving from $2.45 to $6.51. And so just as a reminder, for those nursing facilities and waiver classes, that means that you were either have a CCRC designation from the insurance division, you have 46 or fewer licensed beds, or you now in state fiscal year 2024 had 19,000 or more Medicaid days. And so that was previously 21,000. It's now changed to 19,000 or more Medicaid days. And then the last piece of the fee side is the add-on went from $15 to $37. And so when I talked about the waiver classes, there will not be changes between waiver class category effective April 1. Those changes will occur on July 1 using data that the department gets after June. And so if you made a licensed bed decrease, you will not see that relief until the July 1, 2023 timeframe. So I just want to make sure everyone was aware that the category is not changing. The second part of the funding of the QAF program is the money returned back to the rates. And so it results in about on average a 10.7% increase to providers' base rates. That not everyone will experience a 10.7% increase. That is subject to case mix values. And so just wanting you to know that it may not be exactly 10.8% for you because you need to factor in what your case mix changed for April 1, which would be using your Q3 2022 case mix values. So there is a case mix change that will occur here in the near future. July 1, we'll begin using the day weighted average case mix determination or calculation from 12/31/2022 calendar year end or year end. So that change will occur with our 7/1/2023 rates. But as far as timeline goes, the tribal notice went out last Friday. Tribal and public notice went out last Friday. That needs to be in for 30 days. They have that time frame ending or the comment period ending March 27th. After March 27th, after that notice period is ended, they are able to submit the SPA to CMS. CMS will then review that. They've asked for expedited, or they will ask for expedited review. That is not a guarantee that they will get that. So there enters some risk into this, but they have said that they will publish and submit rates out to providers as soon as they have a pending SPA, which would be that week of March 27th. They will send those rates to the MCOs and providers at that time. MCOs have 30 days in their contract to enter those rates into their system. That puts us towards that last week of April, which is just in time for us to be able to submit our May claims using the actual or hopefully a usual and customary charge in excess of the new rates that providers will have at that time. I say usual and customary charges because it is hopeful that we will have secured an appropriation at that time as well, or we will know about an appropriation at that time, and that would be effective July 1. And so you'll want to factor that in at least into your July 1 claim submissions when those start to go through. So lots of, I guess, good news for providers, for our nursing facility providers specifically, because we've been able to secure the movement of this program and implementation by April 1. So funds more than likely will be received by providers. I'd guess that second or third week of May, depending on when you submit your claims and how quickly they've been turning those around. So, like I said, good news. Glad to be able to get this ball rolling and some increases for providers at this time. So with that, I guess we can pause and see if there's any questions from members on this program. I guess before I do that, I do want to mention Day on the Hill. We do have Day on the Hill next Wednesday, and many of you I see have registered for that program. We have about 130 people going down. We have messaged out to some individuals to just meet us at the Capitol. And so we will have two full buses going down. So we're really excited about that. As we've developed our talking points for that, any registrants will receive that message here later today. just wanting to point out that while we have many legislative and public policy agenda items, not all items are a need consideration by the Iowa legislature. And so if and when you receive those talking points, you will see that there are very few items that we're asking the legislature to weigh in on. Most importantly, funding for all three sectors is at the top A, B, and C of those talking points. There are a couple other things that we're just having conversations on, but you will see a slimmed down number of asks, with funding for all three sectors being the highest priority of all items. So with that, I'll pause. Maria, I see you unmuted. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add.
Yeah, nope. I think I'm good. Yeah, just any questions if anyone has any.
Yes, this is Diane Schrack. And if you could explain about where we're at on private pay rates having to be higher than the Medicaid rate.
So I guess I want to talk about two things with private pay rates, because you reminded me, Diane. First of all, for the provider tax or the quality assurance assessment fee program, we want to make sure that providers know and do not increase your private pay rates with a cited reason of the provider tax or the quality assurance assessment fee program. We cannot have private pay rates being cited and then having members or residents or resident family members reaching out to their legislators saying, hey, we got this rate increase because of this tax that you guys have imposed on us. That is the last thing that we want. That seriously puts the program in jeopardy. And if that program does not exist, providers would be paid at their base rates for Medicaid residents. And so that would be obviously a major problem without that, because you think about what that provider tax or that add-on and return fee does to your rate in this new program. It adds like $70 or something like that onto your rate. So it would be a major problem. But that's not the question that you asked, Diane. You asked a question about how private pay rates need to be in excess of Medicaid.
We talked about doing it legislative or through rules and regulations through DHS.
Right. So we will not do that through a legislative measure. We've been having conversations with the department on private pay rates needing to be in excess of Medicaid rates. There used to be a rule back many years ago, but that is no longer there. But needing to ensure that your private pay rates are more than what the state pays as the payer of last resort, because you think of optics, you think of private pay individuals not paying as much as what the state pays for those individuals on Medicaid is not necessarily a great look. So we are working on the policy side of securing that in there, and with nothing else that gives providers something to point to say, hey, you know, I have to do this. The hope is that most providers already are appropriately pricing their product to make sure that it is above what Medicaid pays for the same service. And so hopefully, you know, we don't have to have, and providers don't have to have this language to know how to price your product, but we're hoping to try to get something to give you something to point to as well.
So is that going to be one of the things with two increases, hopefully, when would be the effective date? And then also, how are you going to do it? Are you going to say average Medicaid, average private pay rate, or your highest private pay rate?
Yeah, that's yet to be determined, Diane. Yeah. I would guess that it probably needs to be of similar makeup. So I would guess if it would be like if you have a semi-private room rate, it would be, because that's what the residents on Medicaid are looking at. We haven't quite gotten all the details of how we want that to look. Is it just your base rate? Your base Medicaid rate that the private pay rates need to be above. We're factoring all that in as we look at this, if we have a willing partner with the department to move that forward. So we'll obviously be discussing it more, but we don't have all the details right now on how to calculate that.
I would hope that you would do like effective date of maybe October with the potential two changes.
Yeah, and I think that as we're looking at rules and with the rules moratorium right now, I don't think that it would be any sooner than that if it did go forward. So I think that there would be a runway. We would ask for a runway for providers to come to meet that, because if you are significantly behind and we are able to receive an appropriation on July 1, that could be a huge rate increase for a resident. And so we're being cognizant of that too when thinking about the runway.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? All right. Well, we almost took the entire 30 minutes this time. As always, you can always send any questions in to any of the team here at IHCA. We're happy to answer them for you. Again, wanted to give a thanks to our sponsor, Cornerstone Government Affairs, for all the help that they give down to Capital. And so if anyone has any questions, just let us know. Otherwise, have a great weekend. Thanks.